Another son,
known as Kavir.
Kaniyan,
who was the youngest.
Vishayeshu,
in material enjoyments.
Nisprioha,
being without attachment.
Vishrija,
after giving up.
Rajam,
his father's property.
The kingdom.
Sahamandubihi,
accompanied by friends.
Vanam,
the forest.
Nivesha,
keeping always.
Chite,
within the core of the heart.
Purusham,
the supreme person.
Swarochisham,
self-effulgent.
Vivesha,
entered.
Kaishoravayaha,
a young man,
not fully in youth.
Param,
the transcendental world.
Gataha,
entered.
Translation,
being reluctant to accept material enjoyment, Manu's youngest son, whose name was Kavi, gave up the kingdom before attaining full youth. Accompanied by his friends, he went to the forest, always thinking of the self-effulgent Supreme Personality that got it within the core of his heart. Thus, he attained perfection. So you can repeat,
being reluctant to accept material enjoyment.
Manu's youngest son,
whose name was Kavi,
gave up the kingdom
before attaining full youth.
Accompanied by his friends,
he went to the forest.
Always thinking of
the self-effulgent Supreme Personality of Godhead
within the core of his heart.
Thus he attained perfection.
So, next text does not have a purport. So we'll read that, and the text after that does have a purport. So text 16.
Kurushan manavadhasan akarusha kshatrajatayaha utarapatta guptaro brahmanya dharma vatsalaha.
From Karusha, another son of Manu, came the Karusha dynasty, a family of Kshatriyas. The Karusha Kshatriyas were the kings of the northern direction. They were celebrated protectors of Brahminical culture and were all firmly religious. Text 17.
Vrishtadarshtam abhut kshatram Brahma bhujam gatam chitau Rigasha vamsha sumatir Bhutta jyotis tato.
So who? From the son of Manu named Drishta came a Kshatriya caste called Dharshtam, whose members achieved the position of Brahmanas in this world. Then from the son of Manu came Riga named the son of Manu named Nriga came Sumati. From Sumati came Bhuta Jyoti, and from Bhuta Jyoti came Vasu. So, purport by Zamangre, Seisi, Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki, Jai. Here it is said, Kshatram Brahma Bhuyam Gatam Shatau. Although the Darshtas belonged to the Kshatriya caste, they were able to convert themselves into Brahmanas. This gives clear evidence supporting the following statement by Narada. It's from the Bhagavatam, 7th canto, 11th chapter, text 35.
Yasya lalakshanam bruktam pumsa varnabhya vyanjatikam yadanyatrapi drishyeta tatinaiva vinirdashet.
If the qualities of one group are found in the men of another, those men should be recognized by their qualities, by their symptoms, not by the caste of the family in which they were born.
birth is not at all important. It is one's qualities that are stressed in all Vedic literature. Okay. So, Om Ganat Timidandasha Gananjana Shilakaya Chatsuru Meditam Yena Tasmai Shigurave Namaha. So we've heard this many times before, and of course in the Bhagavad Gita, Chaturvarna Maya Srishtam Guna Karma Vibhagasha, that Krishna says, I am the creator of this Varnashram system, and one is understood to be of a particular Varna according to his qualities and work. But implicit in this particular verse here that we're reading today, and also implicit in that verse from the Bhagavad Gita, is the importance of instituting Varnashram in society. You know, we understand how one is ascertained to be a particular caste, you know, that's by birth, but then why so much stress on Varnashram anyway? I mean, shouldn't we just all be one? Why divide society up like that, and the Brahmin, Kshatriyas, Vaishnavas, and Shudras? Well, the very, very important reasons for doing that. One reason is in terms of the occupations of the four castes, or the four varnas. We're not going to talk about the ashrams right now, because it's not really applicable in terms of this discussion. So, the different varnas, or people in different varnas, take the wrong occupation, it actually contaminates their minds. For example, we were talking yesterday about the brahmana's occupation. And of course, yajan, yajan, patan, patan, danaprati, braha. That Sanskrit verse describes a brahman's occupation. A brahman's occupation is performing sacrifice, you know, getting donations, teaching about sacrifices, teaching the Vedic literatures, learning about the Vedic literatures, dana pratigraha, giving charity and accepting charity. So these are the brahmana's precise duties. In other words, a brahmana cannot take a salary, at least for his brahminical activities. It's allowable in Kali Yuga, even though traditionally a brahmana would not do that, a brahmana would not work outside of his brahminical activities, but in Kali Yuga there's something called practicality. You know, so someone does have to support himself. There are different things in America and in most countries, even third world countries, things like mortgages, electric bills, and telephone bills, and iPhones that you have to purchase, and all sorts of interesting things like that. So we're not in a traditional Vedic context where the weather is always nice. You can just like fashion a mud hut to live in, or you could live under a tree. I mean, if we were to live under trees here in North Carolina, we'd probably freeze to death. I mean, we're already freezing to death already in the temple room because the person didn't turn the heater on last night. So what to speak of living? So in other words, when you're living in certain places like Western world or even India nowadays, you need to have resources, and there's bills coming in every month, and you don't want to be living under a bridge like the homeless people or living in homeless shelters. So therefore we understand that in this age of Kali, in the practical application, the Brahman can work another occupation, but not connected with his brahminical activities. They have to be kept extremely separate. In the Jiva Dharma, that's also mentioned, you have Brajanath, who was talking to his spiritual master, and he's saying that, you know, Guru Maharaj, you know, I'm making money from basically Bhagavatam recitals. You know, he's teaching Bhagavatam, and Guru Maharaj says, no, you cannot do this. You cannot do that. You do something else. you know, like the Brahmins are nice, they can pick up grains from the field. But he says, do something else. You know, if you need to make money, do something else. Because if you make money from your Brahminical activities, it contaminates the mind. And one loses his Brahminical status by doing that. And of course, we gave the example of Dronacharya, who took up employment. He was a so-called Brahmin, and his mind became contaminated by doing that. So Brahmin has to be very, very careful to separate his means of livelihood or his means of making money, in Kali Yuga at least, from his Brahminical activities. In other words, when we go out to preach, when we go out to do sacrifices, there should be no consideration that of the money, of financial remuneration, or any type of remuneration like that. I mean, people give a donation, and it should be used in Krishna's service. It's like, you know, people give me donations, it's not that I'm acquiring different houses, different things like that, you know, use it in Krishna's service. So one has to be very careful, because if one misuses money that is given, then it's very, very sinful. It's very, very sinful. One has to be careful about use of money. So that's a Brahmin's occupation. Yajan, yajan, patan, apatan, dana, pratigraha. And then Kshatriya's occupation is basically he can extract taxes. And of course, when they fight, then they can, I guess they have the spoils of war or something like that. So that's how a Kshatriya maintains himself. But a Kshatriya is not supposed to extract taxes from Brahmins. Now, sometimes devotees have taken that out of context and said that because I'm a Brahmin, you know, I have a sacred thread, I'm not going to pay taxes. But and they may do things illegally. But actually, we should pay taxes. Actually, even was it Jesus Christ said, you know, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's. So Jesus Christ said his disciples should pay taxes. It's not that we should say I'm a Brahmin, I don't pay taxes. But in a traditional society, the king would not extract taxes from the Brahmins. And of course, the taxes in a traditional society would not be money. They'd be exchange of goods. Like for when he would take taxes from the Vaishyas, traditionally he would take taxes from the Vaishyas. Then it would be some agricultural goods, some gold, some cloth, things like that. Generally was gold. There was no indication of paper money at that particular point. Now, paper money actually is interesting because it's all based upon the faith that people have in that particular paper. I mean, originally in America they had some gold certificates, and now if you go to the government and you say, well, I have $10, I want $10 worth of gold. Of course, gold is worth a lot more now. You'll probably get like one little speck, microscopic speck for $10. But when I was young, gold was, when I was very young, gold was $35 an ounce. Now, what is it? $1,500? Yeah, $1,500 an ounce. So that's called inflation. And it's indirect taxation. I'm not going to get into the whole monetary system, but when the government prints up money, the money becomes worth less, not worthless, but worth less. And then it takes more money. Like Prabhupada would give many times the example of how when he was young, for a few pice, he could feed a whole family or buy enough rice for a week. And now, for a few pice, even for a few rupees, you can't feed it. Family for a week, or even for a few hundred rupees, you can't feed a family. So this is all called inflation. So anyway, so the exchange was basically a barter exchange at that particular point. So that's the Kshatriya's occupation, and the Vaishya's occupation would be based on trade and commerce, agricultural stuff like that. And a Shudra, his occupation would be, he would be doing service for the other classes, and he wouldn't get, let us say, opulence that he could spend freely. he would actually just be provided with his necessities. Now, that appears to be very cruel. You just to provide someone with, you know, just some cloth, some food, some tickets to movies, something like, that's a joke, just testing to see if everybody's awake. That appears, you know, cruel. What about, you know, what about their free will? Because generally, if someone is a Shudra, if you give them money, they will spend it on gambling, illicit sex, intoxication. So therefore, because a Shudra is the mode of ignorance, Vaishya is in the mode of passion and ignorance mixed, Kshatriya is in the mode of passion, and Brahmana is supposed to be in the mode of goodness. So someone in the mode of ignorance will naturally be inclined towards, you know, intoxication, illicit sex, gambling, and all those other things. In other words, that's what happens. I mean, for example, in one country that I preach in, which I'll remain nameless to protect the innocent, it's said that the tradition or what usually happens is that people get a salary and they spend that salary the first day, right after they get their salary, and they don't save anything. And so people are struggling because of that, or they spend their salary on some sort of intoxication. So it's very important for the government, a traditional Vedic government, to regulate the means of livelihood for the different varnas. Of course, the government or the brahmanas or whoever is in charge would ascertain what varna someone was. And that's quite easy to ascertain. Of course, in the Vedic tradition, you have the samskara where the child chooses either the money, which is gold, or chooses the kshatriya implements, or chooses the books, or chooses some sort of shudra implements. That's the tradition. But that's not the be-all and end-all. Actually, the government or the leaders of society would examine each person to see, and then engage them accordingly. Now, another reason besides the means of livelihood is that everybody is happy in society. Like Prabhupada said, the leader's business is to make sure that everybody is happy, especially temple presidents, that all the devotees are happy and they're getting plenty of food, prasad, in our particular case. So the government has to make sure that that's happening, because if people are improperly engaged, they'll be miserable. And not only will they be miserable, it creates a dharma in society. I mean, for example, in the case of, let's take the example of Lord Ramchandra, where there was a Shudra in his society who was performing some sort of yajna, some sort of sacrifice. It was creating a disturbance in the fabric of society. There was people dying improperly, or, you know, at an improper time. There was death or pestilence, and Lord Ramchandra noted that. And when he noted that, he understood that someone in a particular varna was executing the duties of a person in another varna. So he went out to try to discover who that particular person was, and he discovered there was a Shudra who was performing the duty of a Brahmana. And what he did is immediately cut off the head of the Shudra, and everything was peaceful after that. So in other words, the Kshatriya would actually enforce people sticking to their own dharma. And Krishna, of course, in the Bhagavad Gita, stresses this. He says everyone can become perfect by performing the actions of their particular varna. And he says one shouldn't even try to perform the activities of another varna, even if your activities in your varna are full of fault, but still one should do one's duty in one's particular varna. I mean, varnashram is extremely important. That's the point I'm making here. And then, of course, with as far as Maharaj Pariksit was concerned, he discovered a Shudra who was dressed as a king. And this Shudra dressed as a king, wasn't doing the Kshatriya's duty. He was actually torturing a bull and a cow. And so Parikshit Maharaj got ready to kill that Shudra. And of course, the Shudra later on apologized. That Shudra, of course, was the personification or personified Kali Yuga. He apologized and begged for a place to live, and Parikshit Maharaj gave him four places, actually five places to live, but in the beginning, four places, which are wherever the four regulated principles are being broken. And the fifth place was wherever gold is being hoarded. Because where gold is being hoarded, then there's the tendency to do illicit things or break the regulated principles where one is hoarding gold. Prabhupada actually even said, as far as the Krishna consciousness movement, he said, one should not be hoarding money, one should spend it. And he gives the example of his spiritual master, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who whenever he found out that one of his temples got a major donation, he took the money. And he utilized it, actually for many of his preaching programs, including the Dal program. And Prabhupada also did the same thing. Like when he found out that a temple got a major donation, Prabhupada would take the money for his PPT. So, and Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Prabhupada said that they would generally want to keep the temple in a state of poverty. The reason for that is not that they wanted the devotees to be bereft of the necessities of life, but, you know, if you keep someone with minimum resources, then people will be inclined to preach more. When there's more opulence, then people just sit down and think, well, everything is all right, you know, we got so much money in the bank. And so Krishna makes the arrangements so the devotees are struggling sometimes. So, anyway, so Parikshit Maharaj, he chastised Kali because Kali was acting, he was a Shudra in the guise of a Kshatriya. So ultimately, when we institute Varnashram, or not we, because I'm not going to be around for that one, some of our descendants, disciplic descendants, will institute Varnashram, then these Varnas will be very strictly observed. I mean, of course, that really goes against the American grain or the Western grain right now, that this whole Varna is a caste system. At the same time, everyone in every Varna will be expected to perform devotional service, to engage in the process of bhakti. And at the same time, it will be allowed, if someone develops the qualities of a higher Varna, to take the duties and the occupation of the higher Varna. It'll be a dynamic. It's not going to be that, you know, you're stuck in the system just because you're 20 years old and you happen to be a Shudra. You're going to be always a Shudra. I mean, just like the story of Haridas Thakur. Haridas Thakur was the best of Brahmanas. And he was respected like that. Even though he was born in a Muslim family, he was respected like that by Advaitacharya. Advaitacharya, when he performed the Shraddha, or the Shraddha ceremony, he would give Haridas Thakur the plate, the Shraddha plate, considering him to be the best of the Brahmanas, because you're supposed to give the best of the Brahmanas the Shraddha plate when you do that ceremony. And he would quote this verse, Aho bhattasva pachato gariyan, yadvi vagre vartate namatubhyam. And that verse states that how wonderful it is, that even if one is born in the family of swapacha, dog cookers, actually usually translated as dog eaters, but the direct translation is dog cookers. I have another Christian dream. She's expert in Sanskrit. Just check it. So, no, I heard that in the Rita Nandamarsh translated. That's how I know that. So even if one's born in a family of dog cookers, and that's considered very low, Swapacha Togari and Jadvi Vagri Vartate Namatupyam, that on his tongue you are. Vartate namatupyam. The holy name is being chanted. Shashna arya. Then it's understood that he's understood or performed all these different austerities and tapa and yagyas through many births. And then Brahmanuchunama renantiyate. Then he can rise to the platform of Brahman. It's known that he is a Brahman. If one has the qualities. But even if one is a pure Vaishnava, he may not have the qualities of a Brahman. But he may be a Brahman in the sense that he knows Brahman, which is the direct meaning of Brahman. But he may not be a Brahman. Arjuna was certainly not a Brahman. He was, Krishna said, you're forced by your nature. You will be forced by your nature to fight, whether you fight for me or don't fight for me. So, anyway, so it's a dynamic in society. No one is fixed in a particular varna, but it's the leader's duty to make sure everyone is engaged and everybody makes his money or maintains himself or herself according to their psychophysical nature. So, any questions about these points? It's a little controversial. Yeah.
The economy of the world is based upon what a shooter is like.
Yeah.
Gambling, sports events, intoxication.
Yeah.
So when we talk about this, it flies in such an ethereal realm. Practically speaking, how does the Krishna consciousness movement demonstrate the ability to start?
Right now, we cannot institute that, but at least amongst our members, we should engage ourselves according to our psychophysical nature. Because Prabhupada said it's the spiritual master's duty to ascertain the psychophysical nature of the disciple and engage them. So at least we can do that. I mean, obviously we can't enforce that, even with our own disciples, who don't listen to us anyway. But we can't enforce that, but we should guide people or in that particular way. And set an example. And well, of course, we have to have an agrarian situation too. You can't be based upon the... ultimately, if we're going to establish a Krishna conscious society, it can't be based upon this overconsumption that's driving a modern economy. You know, it's a throwaway culture, you know, overconsumption, you got to get your latest iPhone or whatever like that. And that's shudra activity, you know, I have to have. Of course, the Vaishya also has unlimited desires, that's described by Srila Prabhupada. But he's controlled, the Vaishya and the Kshatriya are controlled by the Brahmanas. That keeps them in check. And a shudra, of course, too. Controlled by the Brahmanas. So how to institute that, I don't have a clear idea how to go from here to there. I don't really have a clear idea.
Examples of a movement like the Bhagavan Hungary or something like
that? Farm and Hungary, whether that's an example of that. It's hard for me to say whether that's a practical example of Varnashram at this point. I mean, I have to examine it further, and I have my own ideas about it. I don't want, you know, get into too controversial subject matters of politics in the Bhagavatam class. It's not really the proper venue. Whether that's a good example, I don't. Because they are actually dependent upon the modern society, too. They're getting like €1 million in tax money from the government. And that's good. I'm not denying that that's good. I would do the same thing if I could get money from the government that way. But how to get from here to there, I don't know. You know, that's a big question. And, you know, I think ultimately there'll be some form, because Prabhupada keeps stressing Varnashram. He said 50% of his mission was not accomplished because he had not instituted Varnashram. So, and you find all these different statements about Varnashram, as I mentioned here in this verse, it talks about that someone is understood to be a particular caste according to his nature, not according to his birth. But implicit in that is that people should be assigned or understood to be a particular caste. Or particular, let's not use the word caste because that's misused, a particular nature and engaged accordingly. So that, you know, Prabhupada wouldn't talk about it so much unless And the Vedas wouldn't talk about it so much unless there was some necessity of doing it. So, how to do it? Probably not in my lifetime. Probably, maybe in the lifetime of Mother Krishnapriya, but not in my lifetime. Long life.
I bless you with a long life.